The MTO is not liable if no fault or neglect from them, their staff or agents caused the loss or delay. They are also not liable for delays unless the consignor declared and the MTO accepted timely delivery. Two more conditions. The MTO is not liable if no fault or neglect from them, their staff or agents caused the loss or delay, which means that if the MTO will not be liable for any damages or any claims if it is for of no fault of their or neglect from their side, their staff or agents who caused the delay. They are also not liable for delays unless the consignor declared and the MTO accepted timely delivery. So before you sign the contract with the MTO, it is much better to understand what is going to be the delivery times. And once you have accepted that, declare it on the forwarding note so that the MTO is forced to accept that timely delivery. Section 15, if the consignment details are undeclared and the damage stage is unknown, the MTO's liability is limited to a 2 SDR per kg or 667.67 SDR per package, whichever is higher. Section 16. If the consignment's details are undeclared and damage stage is known, the MTO's liability follows the relevant transport law. Let's understand this. Section 15. If the consignment's details are undeclared, that means that what is contained in the consignment is not known and the damage stage is also unknown, the MTO's liability is limited to 2 SDR per kg or 667.67 SDR per package, whichever is higher. Section 16 says, if the consignment's details are undeclared and damage stage is known, the MTO's liability follows the relevant transport law because we do not know the damage stage, that is, where did the damage happen. Since the consignment details are unknown, however, the damage stage is known. Because the damage stage is known, then the relevant transport law will take over. So if the damage stage was at road transport, that road transport law will be relevant. Assessment of compensation. Section 17. Compensation is based on the consignment's value at delivery, determined by market or commodity exchange price. Loss of right of operator to limit liability. Section 18. Liability limits don't apply if the MTO caused the loss, damage or delay intentionally or recklessly. Limitation of liability on total loss of goods, Section 19. The MTO's liability cannot exceed the total loss amount under the Act. Assessment of compensation, Section 17. Compensation is based on the consignment's value at delivery, which means that what was the value of the consignment at the time that it was delivered to the MTO, or is determined by market or commodity exchange price. There is a commodity exchange price index which is available, which can be referred to understand the value of the goods. Loss of right of operator to limit liability under Section 18. Liability limits don't apply if the MTO caused the loss or damage or delay intentionally or recklessly, which means that if the MTO is responsible for the damage or the loss, then there are no liability limits that will apply. Limitation of liability on total loss of goods, Section 19. The MTO's liability cannot exceed the total loss amount under the Act. Whatever is the amount, the loss Act, the Liability Act that was specified, that is 2 SDR per package or 667.67 SDR per kg, or vice versa. Section 20. The consignee must notify the MTO of any loss or damage at handover or within 6 days if the damage is not apparent. Section 22. The MTO has a right of lien over the consignment if dues are not paid. Section 24. The limit is set to 9 months from the date of delivery of the goods, when the goods should have been delivered or when the party entitled to receive the goods can treat them as lost. We are covering multimodal transport. Let's look at what are the other conditions. Section 20 specifies the consignee must notify the MTO of any loss or damage at handover or within 6 days if the damage is not apparent. Let's say the MTO handovers the goods at the port as per the terms conditions and there is no damage that was seen apparently by the consignee. However, the consignee gets 6 days to claim damage or to file a claim for damages within 6 days if the damage was not apparent when he took over the cargo. Section 22, the MTO has right of lien over the consignment if dues are not paid. Let's say if the freight charges are to be paid by the consignee, then the consignment can be held back by the MTO. Even if they were to be paid by the consignor but they have not been paid, then he has the right of lien to hold on to the goods unless and until he is paid. The limit is set, section 24, the limit is set to 9 months from the date of delivery of the goods, when the goods should have been delivered or when the party entitled to receive the goods, which means that you can claim the claim damages and the time limit is set to 9 months from the date of delivery of the goods. That means you received the goods today, you have 9 months from today to file a claim. When the goods should have been delivered, was there an agreement between you and the MTO that the goods would be delivered in 10 days and they were delivered after 10 days, then you have 9 months to be counted from the goods from the 10 days that was agreed. When the party entitled to receive the goods can treat them as lost, let us say that the consignee does not receive the goods at all. Within a reasonable period of whatever is specified in the Act, the goods can be treated as lost and the consignee can put up a claim. Section 25 provides jurisdiction for instituting suits and includes jurisdiction can be defendant's business, residence, contract location or places specified in the contract or transport document. What does Section 25 do? Section 25 provides jurisdiction for instituting suits and claims. Jurisdiction can be the defendant's business or residence. So it can be the address of the business or the residence. Now here we are saying defendant, that means it could be the consignor or the consignee, whoever normally is going to pay for the freight charges. Contract location, maybe the contract was made at a certain place closer to the MTO's office, then that would be the location to be used, or places specified in the contract or the transport document. If there is a separate contract that was signed between the two parties, then there would be a definition there or specification there of the places where the suit or the damages can be claimed. Section 12 says the specified value of a commercial dispute is determined as per the prescribed method. Money, the specified value includes the amount sought plus interest up to the filing. Movable property, right, the specified value is the market value of the movable property at the time of filing. Let's clearly understand what this means. Section 12 says that the specified value of a commercial dispute is determined as per the prescribed method. What is the prescribed method? The prescribed method is, if it is money or currency, the specified value includes the amount sought plus interest up to the filing. That means you will also calculate, you can put up a claim or sue the MTO for that value plus the interest up to the date of filing. If it is movable property, that means that it is material or machinery or some other goods, the specified value is the market value of that movable property, whatever it is, at the time that the suit is being filed. Disputes mainly involve compensation for loss, damage, destruction or indemnity. Disputes may involve the carrier's lien or injunctions, making the goods value relevant. In which cases can you actually file claims? Disputes mainly involve compensation for loss, damage or destruction or indemnity. That means that you are signing some indemnity for covering either of the consignee or consignor. Disputes may involve the carrier's lien or injunctions, making the goods value relevant, which means that if the dispute is involving the carrier's lien or injunctions, carrier's lien is where he has the right to hold on to the goods because of payment of freight. However, if there is some other injunction because of which he is holding on, then the value of the goods is very, very important. Section 12, Clause 13, Clause 3. An appeal or revision is barred if a commercial court confirms its jurisdiction under the Act. Section 16. Read the Schedule 1. The CPC is amended for commercial disputes with key changes including the written statement can be filed within 120 days with reasons and costs. After that, the right is lost. Section 12, subclause 3 says an appeal or revision is barred if a commercial court confirms its jurisdiction under the Act, which means that you cannot ask for any revision or any appeal if the court has confirmed that it is this issue that has been raised or the claim that has been put is under its jurisdiction. Section 16. Read the Schedule 1. The CPC is amended for commercial disputes with key changes. What are the key changes? A written statement can be filed within 120 days with reasons and costs. After that, the right is lost. So, you have to file up a claim with a written statement within 120 days with reasons and costs, after which your right is lost. File reasoned objections with relevant documents, urgent filings allow 30 days for additions. Conclude arguments within 6 months of the first case management hearing. Documents for transportation, we'll look at that later. Let's look at these other two conditions. File reasoned objections with relevant documents, urgent filings allow 30 days for additions. So if you want to file an objection immediately, urgently, you are permitted to do so, and you get 30 days additional to present any other documents or any other additions to your case or your filing. Conclude the arguments. This is the condition for the court who is hearing the case or the tribunal that is hearing the case to conclude the arguments within 6 months of the first case management hearing. This will also be relevant for the defendant. Let's look at documents for transportation. Transport documents are key in international trade issued by shipping lines, airlines, trucking companies or logistics providers. So one thing we see common here is that all transport documents which are relevant are for any trade, whether it is international or local, are issued by shipping lines, airlines, trucking companies or logistics providers, which means the carriers of the cargo. The common documents necessary for any transportation in general and exports in particular are pro forma invoice, the commercial invoice, the packing list, certificates of origin, certificate of free sale, shipper's letter of instruction, inland bill of lading, ocean bill of lading, airway bill, and dangerous goods forms. A pro forma invoice. A pro forma invoice is used by the importer to arrange payment resembling a commercial invoice. What is a pro forma invoice? Let's understand. A pro forma invoice is used by the importer to arrange payment resembling a commercial invoice. A pro forma invoice is issued by the seller to the buyer at the time of order confirmation. Now, this pro forma invoice includes all information about the product, about the goods to be offered by the seller to the buyer and the value of each of them, combining it to become a total value of the pro forma invoice. Now, this pro forma invoice is normally used by the buyer to arrange for payments through his bank or his letter of credits or any other means. Commercial invoice. The commercial invoice includes most details of the export transaction. Now, the commercial invoice is usually made by the seller on the basis of the pro forma invoice as well as the actual goods that are ready for dispatch. Which means that the pro forma invoice may have an order which is very large. However, there is an agreement between the buyer and the seller that the seller would ship out smaller batches of material as per the pro forma invoice. Now, the commercial invoice will have specific details of that consignment under which the goods are being exported or have been sold. Packing list. An export packing list is more detailed and used by freight forwarders, banks, and customs. Certificates of origin. A certificate of origin certifies the country of origin signed by a chamber of commerce or consulate. Let's look at what is a packing list. A packing list is an export packing list, is more detailed and used by freight forwarders, banks, and customs. An export packing list is generated by the seller. Now he uses the commercial invoice as the base and further details where and how each item has been packed, in which carton number, what is the total items in that carton, what is the weight of that carton, what are the dimensions of that carton. Now, this detailed information is required and is necessary for freight forwarders where they would calculate the freight, the weight and book space for on the ship or the truck or whichever mode of transport that is being used. It is also used by banks to understand what our consignments are coming, how much is the weight, what is the likely value of the goods and how big is that consignment. And of course, customs to pinpoint and understand where the goods are, which location, which carton has which goods and pull out anything or demand any goods part number wise or otherwise for them to check and inspect. Certificates of origin. A certificate of origin is generated by the seller, but it has to be signed by the Chamber of Commerce of the country of origin. That means if the manufacturer, let's say, is in India, you will, as a manufacturer, you will generate the certificate of origin. However, it is not valid unless and until it is signed by a Chamber of Commerce or a consulate. Country-specific certificates. Some countries require specific certificates of origin. That means some countries specify the format and the details that they need on the certificates of origin. A certificate of free sale. A certificate for export confirms goods are legally sold and approved by the country, origin country authorities. There are many countries where a lot many companies resort to export just to earn foreign exchange. Here, in such countries, there are some restrictions put up by governments for sale of certain categories of goods. Now, if you are bringing in material from such a country, then a certificate for export or certificate of free sale is required from that country authorities, which confirms that the goods are legally sold and has been approved by the country of origin. Shipper's letter details instructions for moving goods. Inland bill, receipt showing goods destination. Ocean bill, contract of carriage and cargo title. Airway bill, non-negotiable carriage contract. Dangerous goods forms for hazardous shipments for regulations. Let's look at what it is. Shipper's letter details instructions for moving goods, which means that you as a shipper will detail out instructions for the shipping line as to how goods need to be handled, what needs to be done, whether the cartons can be placed in any direction or there is a specific direction for stacking those cartons, etc., etc. Inland bill, receipt which shows goods and destination, which means that let's say the first transporter at the truck who came and picked up the goods, there would be a transporter's representative who comes and issues this inland bill. This is a receipt that they are in custody, that the goods are in his custody and they are bound for a certain destination. Ocean bill, contract of carriage and cargo title. This is very important to understand that the shipper, when he hands over the bill, the material or the goods to the shipping line, an ocean bill of lading is issued by the shipping line. Now, this is important in the fact that it is a contract of carriage and cargo title. Now what happens here? What do you mean by contract of carriage? Contract of carriage is meant by the fact that the shipping line accepts and declares that they have received the said goods contained or whatever other dimensions, number of packages or in a container, and they are bound for to be unloaded at or discharged at a certain destination with the port name and the final destination. But most important here is when this contract of carriage is signed, it also means that the title of goods is now with the shipping line. This is important because the bill of lading, when handed over, the original bill of lading, when handed over by the consignee at destination, will move, the shipping line is obliged to move the hand over the title of goods to the consignee at the destination. So this is a contract where the ownership shifts to the shipping line and then shifts to the consignee. Airway bill is non-negotiable. That means there is no contract, there is no cargo title here involved. It is just a carriage contract between the shipper, the airline and the consignee. Dangerous goods forms for hazardous shipments per regulations. We all understood what are the requirements of hazardous goods and what are the documents that must accompany every hazardous transportation. CMR document is an international consignment note, governs the responsibilities and liabilities for carriage of goods by road. Multimodal or multimodal bill of lading or FBL, a type of international transport documents covering two or more modes of transport. Cargo insurance certificate, document indicating the type and amount of insurance coverage, includes the name of the insurance company and conditions of coverage. CMR document. What is a CMR document? It is an international consignment note, which means that if you are transporting goods by road, crossing borders, international borders, then the transporter receipt is no more valid. It is a transporter receipt with for an international consignment governing certain rules and regulations of both the countries. It also governs the responsibilities and liabilities of the carriage of goods by road. Multimodal bill of lading, a type of international transport document covering two or more modes of transport. We understood that a multimode MTO is nothing else but a person or a company who takes care of transportation by multiple modes of transportation. In such a case, it is a multimodal bill of lading that is issued by that company, which covers all the modes of transport for the entire journey. Cargo insurance certificate. All cargo that is shipped by road, by rail, or by sea or air is insured most of the time. Although there is no law that says that that goods must be insured. It's a risk that the shipper or the consignee needs to decide. However, if there is a insurance done, then a document indicating the type and amount of insurance coverage, what are the liabilities, what are the perils that it covers, and also includes the name of the insurance company and the conditions of coverage. Thank you.